Did you have a good spring break, Sophie?
I did. I had a really good spring break, actually.
That's excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, Asbury University, we want to welcome you this afternoon to the Embrace Radio Hour. I am so glad to be back with you, Maria, and to have David with us this afternoon.
We missed you, Esther. We missed you last week.
I am so sorry that I couldn't be there. I missed being with you and getting to interview Jordan. So thank you, Jordan, for being a part of the show last time. And we're really excited to welcome you back. And we hope that you have been enjoying the stories that you are getting to hear of the lived experiences of our intercultural students. And I hope that what you hear from each one of them, you know that it comes from their hearts and from a desire for them to welcome you into their space, into their journey. So Asbury and guests that are beyond our campus, we continue to invite you to tune in and listen to us in the next couple weeks. So it's good to be back.
Well, we're glad you're back, Esther. It's not the same without you.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. David is going to introduce himself here in a little bit, but I just want to say a few words. I am personally excited to have David McCorvey on the show because while we were just getting ready to come live, I was checking in with him about his mom and dad, and I have the privilege of knowing his mom and dad. Actually, Dr. Everett McCorvey came to campus with his ensemble and hosted an incredible program a couple years ago, and our campus was thrilled with what we got to experience and see. And his mom, Alicia, has also been here. So if you're listening in, greetings to you from Asbury University, and we're so glad that David is with us. So Maria, I'll hand it over to you to get us started.
Oh, thank you. David, we're so glad you're here. Can you help our listeners understand a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm David McCorvey. For those who don't know, I'm a senior at Asbury, about to graduate in, I think it's like 26 days
but
now.
But who's counting, David? Yeah. You're not counting, right?
No biggie. My major is communications, and I'm a Spanish minor as well. And this is my first time being on the radio show, and I'm really excited and thankful that you guys have me on today. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
We're excited to hear from you. This is the first time I've actually met you, so everything you say is going to be a surprise to me, which is exciting. So I didn't know you were a Spanish minor.
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
All right. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you'd like to do after graduation in 26 days?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 26 days... Wow, it's weird to talk about like going into like the real world in under a month. I'm so excited to announce, like, I just got accepted into Georgetown in Washington, D.C. I found out like a week ago, and I waited 8 weeks to hear back, so I just figured I didn't get in, and opening and finding that out was amazing for me.
Wow, congratulations.
It's
really exciting.
Yeah. Thank you. That's where I plan to end up, but I'm not sure when I will. I did an internship last summer with Fayette County Public Schools in their communications department, and it's the second largest school district in Kentucky, so their communications department and PR department, they handle a lot of kids. There's over like 40,000 kids, and I mean, you guys know how parents are, so you can see how that could be really fun. And so I did an internship there last summer, and they offered me a position in the fall, so I might work a year so I can get more money before I move to D.C. So I'm thinking I'll probably work in their communications department for a year and then hopefully go to Georgetown after that.
Wow. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Lots of exciting things ahead for you.
I know. There's so many good options, but it's weird with more great options. It's an even harder decision process.
Yeah. Tough choices. Mm-hmm. So, David, can you tell us where you're from and how you ended up at Asbury?
Yeah. So I'm originally born and raised in Lexington, Kentucky, which is not very far away, about 30.
I think most of our listeners should know where it is. Yeah. It's the only place you can go to in Wilmore where something's happening, right?
If you want something to eat, you know, you got to go over there. But so I'm from Lexington, Kentucky. And how I got to Asbury was I was a senior at, so I did my first 3 years in high school at Henry Clay High School in Lexington, Kentucky, which is massive. There's like 3,500 students. And you couldn't move in the hallways. But I did my first 3 years there. And then I did my senior year at West Jessamine. My family moved to Nicholasville. We wanted a change of scenery and a new high school, a new basketball coach. And so we went there. And when I was finishing my senior year there, I got in contact with Coach Will Schaus, who is the men's basketball coach here, about playing basketball. And we really, I mean, I'd talked to coaches before, but when I talked to him, I felt like he really cared about my future. And something he always says is that it's not as much about the sport itself when you graduate from Asbury, but making like his job and making sure that you leave a better student and a better person than when you entered. And when he said that, that really just spoke out to me. So he's a big reason that I ended up at Asbury.
Great.
That is so good to hear. David, shout out to Coach Will Schaus. I've heard a lot of great narratives and stories of how students have been so blessed by the way you work with them, the way you invite them into your family. So I've heard that from numerous basketball players. And so thank you, Coach, for being available to our students in that way. David, I express that I've had the great joy of knowing your mom and dad, and I think even having met your sister at a program on our campus. And so tell us a little bit about your family and what is it like to grow up as a McCorvey?
That's it's a lot to be a McCorvey. but this is really important, actually, because it kind of like molds and defines me a little bit. But my parents are both opera singers, which is not the career that you hear a lot of people doing. But my dad's the director of UK Opera Theater, and my mom is mostly mom, but she does a lot of freelance singing around everywhere, actually, New York, Kentucky, Chicago. But my dad has a few choirs outside of UK Opera Theater, which is his main job at UK. He has a New York chorale and American Spiritual Ensemble, which their job is keeping Negro spirituals alive, and they travel all around the world and even to Europe. They're amazing. I wish I should have brought like something to play from that, but I didn't even think about that.
I wish you did, David. Yeah. It would have been a great contribution addition to our show today. But maybe in the future.
Maybe,
but you've got only 29 days, right? Is that what you were counting?
Yeah, 29, 26, something like that.
Something.
I don't know if that's just school days or like.
It must just be school days because we're not in April yet.
Yeah.
Either way, it's not very many.
Yeah. So my dad works at UK in the opera theater, and my mom is an opera singer as well. But it's just interesting because growing up, I played the I played the violin, the piano, baritone, and trumpet, and I didn't really sing, but I stopped playing all the instruments like around the end of middle school. I was in the choir. I pretty much did like every musical thing possible. I did it, but my parents didn't really pressure me to do it. It was kind of just like in the family. And but yeah, they didn't make me continue doing it because my first question that most people ask when I'm out is, oh, so you're a singer too, like you sing. And I was like, no, you know, I play basketball and other stuff. But and one of my sisters lives in Asheville, North Carolina, and she is a social worker. She does equine therapy. She does some really amazing stuff. And my other sister lives in Nashville, and she is about to graduate from Vanderbilt's Divinity School, and she's moving to Colorado. So it's really easy to remember Nashville and Asheville. So That's what they do, and that's pretty much the family right there. Yeah,
that's excellent, David. That's so good to hear about your family. Tell us, give us a little insight into David growing up in that home. What was it like to be?
Oh man, let me think for a second.
Any fun stories from growing up at home? What was family life like? Did you go to every performances that mom and dad had?
I tell you, most families or most households, when I'm sitting in my room, I can off pretty much every morning depend on my parents doing vocal warm-ups. vocal warm-ups is pretty much an everyday thing. They go through the whole scale, so that's a great alarm clock, I'll say that.
I was wondering if it served as a great wake-up call to everyone in the house.
There's pretty much always music in the house, because where I stopped playing instruments so I could play basketball, my sisters play violin now, and my mom plays recorder, other stuff. My dad can play the piano. So I would always wake up to music in the house, which is interesting that I don't listen to more classical music or opera. I think maybe I got like burned out on it.
You associate it with being awakened early in the morning.
Maybe that's
so
what
you're
it
like,
is.
No, no.
That must be what it is.
But now no I just classical music for me.
Yeah. Now I just listen to more contemporary music. But yeah, pretty much to this day, actually last Sunday I was just at the opera house, but I go to a lot of shows and a lot of operas, which is good. I mean, I feel really cultured, and I'm happy that I can do that because it's really fun stuff. I wish more people my age went to operas and musicals, but there's kind of like a misconception that opera is just for old people and stuff, and that is not completely true. There's a lot of white hair at the operas that I go to, but there's also some younger people there. But I go to operas and musicals probably like 3 a month maybe. And when my dad's putting on a show with the UK Opera Theater, I go to all those, and they do an amazing job. The students there are incredible. A lot of operas and musicals kind of makes up the family McCorvey dynamic.
Yes, and that's a great dynamic. So thank you for sharing with us, David.
Yeah.
So, David, one of the things that we like to do on the show as we're talking about student stories mm-hmm. is look for the threads of identity, faith, and culture and how those are woven together to form our students. And everybody's story is so unique. Everyone is influenced by different cultures, backgrounds, family. So far from you, we've heard music.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that has its own culture, the opera culture, and some of the had some pretty big impacts on your life.
Right.
So can you talk to us about that culture and maybe other cultures that have influenced and formed your identity?
Yeah. So I guess when I'm kind of thinking about my identity, I think a little about the music, because that kind of, when I was hanging out with like a bunch of athletes and stuff in middle school and high school, that was something about me that was really different, was that with opera, I mean, you can kind of associate it with like kind of like high culture and stuff, and like the educated and stuff like that, because I mean, back in even like in Roman Greek like type times when there was some kind of performance or like Colosseum idea type thing, it was mostly, you know, people who could afford it and afford to go to that. So I kind of think that dynamic is still in place today, that, you know, to go to an opera or something, you kind of have to be more affluent to afford it. And so I think that had a big effect on me, just because of I was talking to my parents, colleagues and stuff, and people at the opera. So I had to be able to speak to people in a kind of an educated fashion in a way that, you know, reflected well upon me and like my family and stuff. So I spent a lot of time talking to important people and stuff like that. And that kind of changed my dialect and jargon, you know, how I would speak to people. And that kind of differentiated me from my friends a lot when I was in middle school and high school, because I wasn't using like a lot of like slang and stuff like that, and I was kind of different in that aspect, and that formed my identity a lot. But the two things I really think of a lot are my dad and just athletics, period. And I say my dad because a lot of people in their lives don't have a role model mm-hmm. that they look at and that is kind of a mold for them of the person that they want to be like. But I saw my dad in the community, and I saw my dad doing a lot of things with music, and that was a big motivation for me because that showed me that I could do that mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. I could be a great person in my community. Because my parents, they're really big philanthropists, and my dad sings at a lot of events mm-hmm. and he's really a great guy. So when I saw that my dad and my parents were in the community doing really positive things, that showed me that I could do those things. So mm-hmm. I think that formed my identity a lot. And then the other one I was talking about was athletics, because I actually wrote about this in my my statement of purpose for Georgetown, but there's kind of like a mold for people, if you're especially being African American and playing basketball, a lot of people, it's kind of like a negative stigma academically, because a lot of people have an image of who you should be if you're black and you play basketball or you play any sport, really. They kind of think that it's really consuming and that's all that you do. So a lot of people are surprised when, you know, I'm telling people, like, I'm doing these internships or I have like good grades or what I want to do postgraduate plans, because they're like, oh wow, I just thought of you as like a basketball player, mm-hmm. an athlete. I figured you go do something like whatever after college, or it might not be important to you because basketball is also so important to me. But I think just showing people that you can be an academic and you can be an athlete, that was big in forming my identity. So those two things were just really big to me.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is that when people first see you and you maybe say, oh, I play basketball for Asbury, they have this image of you as a black athlete. And this comes with these stereotypes. Mm-hmm. But the different influences you've had, opera, music, culture, your parents, watching them be involved in the community, I would imagine church is a part of that too, and absolutely. Religious community, your academics, you just kind of blow apart mm-hmm. that stereotype, right?
Yeah.
Which we see so often every time we tell a student story. We might start with something simple like, oh, you're an MK, mm-hmm. or oh, you're a member of BSA, and then it just explodes because nobody really fits that one stereotype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes people just make assumptions and it's just like not right at all. But it makes me think of in the NBA, there was a big campaign called More Than Just Athletes with LeBron James. But he was, because a lot of the professional athletes were starting to like talk about politics and stuff. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh, you guys are just athletes. Like, don't talk about it or anything. So that kind of started like kind of like an uprising. And there was a big More Than Just Athletes campaign where everyone was wearing shirts and stuff. And I thought that was awesome that they did that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. As we are able to expand beyond these categories we give people, then people become much more than just a stereotype we might have of them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the music culture, that's really interesting to me, how that impacted your identity formation.
Yeah.
And even the way that you would end up speaking and thinking mm-hmm. about things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of not even something you notice till like now I can look back at it and I'm thankful that I went through that, because I just, when it's like when I'm going to these operas and talking to people and I find myself like speaking more properly or something, and then talking to other people who don't like speak the same way that I do, it's really interesting because it's like, wow, I didn't even notice like that was going on.
Yeah, that wasn't something you identified until later when you could step back. Yeah. Now, I have a question about how that might have been for you, because it kind of strikes me that you're navigating a few different cultures mm-hmm. here. A music culture, opera culture, I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah.
African-American culture, the culture of athletics.
Yeah.
And you have said a couple times that the music aspect kind of set you apart. And I'm just wondering what that was like for you to navigate those communities, and if being set apart was ever difficult for you.
Yeah. I think it's interesting how people are pretty much like scared of what they don't know. But so in like middle school and high school, a lot when I would be like, oh, I'm going to an opera this weekend or something, you know, people will start laughing and be like, why? Like, what would you do that for? And I'm like, oh, it's in the family or whatever. And they just don't really understand that. And so I went through that a lot. It wasn't ever that, like, I felt like I was like marginalized or anything for liking opera. But I guess with the way stereotypes work and have always worked, but people will be like, oh, you're a black athlete, like you gotta like hip hop or something. Mm-hmm. You gotta like pop, like new pop music or something. And they see me like going to these operas and stuff, and they're just like, that's not you. But that's what is so interesting, that you just don't really know people, like, mm-hmm. and you don't know what they're like. So when someone's saying like, that's not you, it kind of just reflects like poorly upon them for like assuming that you're this way or the other. And, you know, just people really need to get to know you and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
So that wasn't so much an internal thing for you as feeling separate, but just you sort of put it on the people assuming, like, yeah. It's their loss yeah. for
but,
assuming.
Yeah. And it's like, but I definitely noticed it though. Mm-hmm. And like we were talking about earlier, it's like just stuff that you notice a lot more when you're older. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, if I'm saying like, I'm going to an opera, and people associate that, like, they're like, oh, that's like really white of you or something. And it's like, like what does that really, like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know?
Right. Now, did you ever have any of the opposite happen, where you were in those opera music settings where you were also, people would assume that you shouldn't be there?
Yeah. I'll say not as much, just because almost like everyone in Kentucky knew who my dad mm-hmm. was, and mm-hmm. a lot of people say that we look alike. But it's also interesting when I got to, now that I'm in these opera environments and music environments, I'm surprised by, or maybe I was surprised by, how many African Americans are actually in opera mm-hmm. and in musicals and stuff. Because I mean, I guess even when I was growing up, I thought, when I was more naive, I was like, oh, okay, opera, like, that might be more of a thing that, like, white people do or whatever. But then I get there, and there are amazing black singers there mm-hmm. and amazing black musicians. And I think, I mean, that's why people tell you to, like, go out and, like, find culture and go mm-hmm. out and do things and experience different things, because you'll be surprised, and that'll change your outlook for your whole future. You know, mm-hmm. that'll change everything. So just me seeing, like, black people in music and opera, it just added to the fact that I felt like I could, you know, go out and do anything. Like I talked about seeing mm-hmm. my dad do stuff in the community. When I saw even black people in other areas succeeding, it just showed me even more that, like, you can go out and do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the importance of exposure.
Yeah.
And of role important. Models. Yeah. Right. That you had the opportunity to see people doing things that opened up possibilities yeah. for you. You maybe wouldn't have thought of before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
David, it's been so good to take in what you're saying, and you're helping me remember that it's so important to take the first step of getting to know people, right?
Yeah.
To not live under the assumptions or perhaps paradigms, mm-hmm.
exactly.
which is simply the ways of thinking that may have been transmitted to us in the process of, you know, socialization, where we just receive information from family and just take it at face value
yeah.
or receive information from our peers and just take it at face value without critical mm-hmm. Thinking through mm-hmm. that. So thank you for reminding us today that it is important to not live under stereotypes mm-hmm. as a source of information, right? That we really carry the responsibility of getting to know each other well so that we can know the true person, the true self of a person. Yeah. So I was just going to kind of continue to bring that to another perspective, to another domain.
But we may have a song first.
Oh, we do have a song? Okay, yes. I'm getting some cues that it's time for a song.
But I think we found your songs, David. So would you like to introduce, you've picked a couple of songs, so choose one and tell us why you chose it and what it says about you.
Yeah, so the first song I picked was Young, Dumb, and Broke by Khalid. And I picked it because in like where I am in college right now, a lot of people think that just because, like, you're in a young, dumb, and broke stage that, like, you failed. But there's a lot of people that are in the same place. And, you know, that's just part of the journey. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get through it. You know, there's people with you.
All right. Well, we'll enjoy this song and then be back.
So you're still thinking of me, just like I know you should. I cannot give you everything, you know I wish I could. I'm so high at the moment, I'm so caught up in this. Yeah, we're just young, dumb, and broke, but we still got love to give while we're young, dumb. Young, young, dumb, and broke. Young, dumb. Young, young, dumb, and broke. Young, dumb. Young, young, dumb, and broke. Young, dumb, broke high school kid. In common, we argue all the time. You always say I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure I'm right. What's fun about commitment when we have all life to live? Yeah, we're just young, dumb, and broke, but we still got love to give while we're young, dumb. Young, young, dumb, and got love to give while we're young, dumb, young, young, dumb, and broke. Young, dumb, young, young, dumb, and broke. Young, dumb, young, young, dumb, and broke. Young, dumb, broke high school kid.
David, thank you for sharing that selection with us. And Asbury, while we were taking a quick break, I was sharing with David that if it's okay with you, I would like to just remind you that if you feel young and dumb and broke, which is a vernacular that probably I wouldn't use, but then it expresses a lot of sentiments that we all experience at some point. We've all felt too young to be at a table, or you know, not old enough, mature enough to be able to contribute to something. Yeah. We've all felt foolish at some point.
Yeah.
We have all felt that way, perhaps when we've not made the best choices, you know. But we do have the opportunity to come to our senses. And then broke. Who cannot relate to that?
That's the best one.
I think broke is a very common experience across the board, especially if you're a college student, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think I remember that even in my seminary days, Maria. Mm-hmm. I never thought you could ever not be broke. Like, it just felt
never ending.
It felt
right?
like it is just a position in life that remains with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason I say that is because it's so important for us to hear. This message that, you know, there is not just hope for us, but there are numerous opportunities that we can seek, and we can move beyond these places where we may feel trapped within ourselves. Yeah. And so thank you, David, for bringing that selection to us. And I want to move us forward by talking a little bit about your faith. Could you share with us how your faith informs who you are, mm-hmm. But also your views on ethnicity and culture, or for that matter, on the aspect of race relations. So how would you make this connection between faith, ethnicity, culture, and how that has shown up in your life, in your practice? So anything that comes to mind, share with us your thoughts on
All right. I was trying to break it down in my head, so I completely answer it. So I guess, according to my faith, mainly, and I try to embody this, but the things I think of first are pretty much compassion and forgiveness. So just growing up in the church, I went to church pretty much every Sunday with my parents until I came to Asbury, and then I was at chapel 3 times a week. But, just being in the church, I could have been, maybe you could call it sheltered a little bit, but I don't know, when I was in my church, which was downtown Lexington, First Presbyterian Church, I saw so much, love going around, and everyone treating each other with respect, that when I grew up and as I was growing up, I knew that's something that I wanted to embody myself and show that same compassion that was shown towards me to other people. And another thing was just forgiveness. And I would say this is probably where I would relate it to more race relations, but a lot of people's ignorance that I've seen and that's shown towards me, and like God said to, you know, turn the other cheek, and that really just stuck out to me, because there's always gonna be people in the world that just don't treat you how you should be treated. And through the church, I learned forgiveness, and I feel like I was able to, you know, as I took, you know, some type of racial discrimination or racial prejudice, and I received that, I was able to maybe forgive them and think about how I could maybe help them learn and get past that, even if it didn't work. But, like, there was a lot of times, I mean, as kids growing up, sometimes you just don't know any better, but when, like, other black people or like your white friends are saying, like, oh, you don't like grape soda or something, like, oh, all people like grape soda, I'm like wow, you must not know any black people or something, like, you know,
sure,
stuff like that. Or like, you don't like chicken wings, and you're thinking like no, or whatever, if that's your answer. And you just have to be able to forgive people and, you know, try to help them through that. But forgiveness, compassion. I think I said it earlier, but like love and just loving everyone and all people really was that's like something that's hard to do, especially for myself when I'm like going into other cultures or if I'm meeting new people, or people that are different from me. I always want to make sure that I make them feel, you know, loved and important, because I know that's how I want to be treated. Especially when you go into a new environment. I was thinking about this the other day, but I went somewhere and I saw somebody smile at me and I was like, wow. And it kind of just like changed everything, because all of a sudden I felt comfortable in that environment, and just like someone extending love towards me, I want to be able to make people feel that way and extend that love towards other people. That's like really big for me. My background on my phone is actually to the world you may be one person, but to one person you may be the world, because sometimes all it takes is just like love from one person to just like change your whole outlook on everything. So I'd say those are a few things that like the faith and race relations just shaped me. But I probably didn't answer that completely.
No, you did an excellent job, David. In fact, you put us right in the center of the Lent season. You talked about compassion and forgiveness. And I couldn't but help remember that we are in the middle of a significant journey in Christian life where we're in the season of Lent, where we remember, because of the great compassion that God has for each one of us, his compassion moved him to send his son, Jesus Christ, who the greatest act of forgiveness was taking our sins upon himself, right? And I am always amazed and floored at the fact that how could someone without sin become the one that bore our sin? That's a profound mystery that I'm not capable of fully deciphering, you know, or breaking down in this moment. But it is just mind-boggling for me, because the question is, how can I grow in my capacity to forgive, to recognize that not every attack or comment or stereotype is probably coming with the malicious intent, right? So how do we discern that? And yet, so I think you bringing to the forefront compassion and forgiveness is so significant in this Lent season, because we're right in the middle of it. You know, we're about 3 or so weeks away from Easter. And so it's a good reminder to do a self-evaluation of where are we at in demonstrating compassion and forgiveness towards all persons of every culture, every ethnicity. So thank you. So you did a great job, David. You did a great job. And so could you just follow that up and share with us, what has your experience been like on AU's campus? What has life been like for you? You know, during the break you said, from day one to now, remaining 29 days, right? So from your freshman year to now your senior year, you've seen a major shift even within yourself. Yeah. So perhaps speak to that a little bit. But what has life been like for you on our campus?
Okay. I tell everybody this, but Asbury has been an amazing experience for me. And as much as I talk about I'm really excited to leave, I'm also really thankful for what Asbury has been for me and what it's done for me, because when I was in Lexington and stuff, I was around in high school a lot of bad influences and a lot of people who really just like squander their lives away with drugs and alcohol. And that's even in high school, people are like, oh, like, at such a young age, it really does happen, because like high school in the city, like it was really like that. But when I moved to Wilmore, a lot of people are like, oh, it's such a slow tempo, there's nothing to do there. But that was so big for me because it's kind of like a meditative place for me. Like, and I really was able to find myself here and figure out my life, what I wanted to do, and just being away from all that noise and stuff can be really good. We were talking about over the break about how I'd kind of like matured from freshman year to senior year and how I changed. And I don't even know what incited the change, but just like when you just get out and go do things, it's amazing, like the results that come. Because I remember I started doing my first internship or taking my first campus job, all that led up to like it just added on to each other and just made me who I am today and like allowed me the opportunities that I had today. What else?
No, that's great, David, because again, your answers today have been so on point, you know, because when you said that being at Asbury was so good for you, a place to be reflective, contemplative, mm-hmm. away from, the struggles that are more prevalent or maybe more visible in Lexington, because I was reminded of our founder, the founder of Asbury University, John Wesley Hughes. That was one of the reasons he founded Asbury in this location. To give students a chance to be away from the influences of the world that sometimes we're not really equipped and informed mm-hmm. to know how to engage with. And so thank you for bringing that to light about our campus, that it really lends an opportunity to reflect and to receive the opportunity to work on building a constructive life. So thank you for that.
It's like, even on the other hand, Asbury is definitely not for a lot of people too, because we had even on the basketball team, since I've been here my freshman year, we've probably had 5 to 7, maybe more people, like maybe even 5 to 10, like transfer, drop the school just because it wasn't for them. So I can also, see the other side of it mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, right? That maybe in some ways the word opportunity keeps coming up. I keep hearing it.
Yeah.
You had a lot of opportunities growing up. You were navigating a couple different cultures, we mm-hmm. might say. And it maybe set you up to be able to be in a place like this and receive and be set apart a little bit. And so... yeah, that's an interesting point. Not for everyone, but we're really glad it was for you.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, glad that you found that in this community. I am interested in what you would like your peers to know about you. If people are listening now, what would you like them to know about you?
So I think something that's really important just for me personally is just that it's really important to get to know people. I think a lot of people, when they see me as an athlete, and I think a lot of athletes on campus can attest to this, we're all a lot more than just the sport that we play. I've always felt like sometimes when there's people like speaking in chapel or something, like you have this like, it's kind of like a joke between like some of my teammates and stuff, but there's like this like model Asburyan. Like, if you're like a model Asburyan, then you can speak in chapel. But like, if you're not, then like you wear sweatpants or something to class or something, like you're probably never going to speak in chapel. So I would just want people to know that we're more than the sport we play, and that like a lot of us like are really genuine and have a lot of intelligent ideas and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, when they see us wearing like sweatpants and a sweatshirt with the Asbury like sports insignia on it, a lot of people think that we just don't really care about school and stuff. But you know, a lot of people would be surprised to find out, like, you're wearing sweatpants because, like, your legs are so sore you don't want to wear, like, regular pants.
I think that kind of brings us back to where we started. Mm-hmm. You know, when I first started hearing your story, a lot of elements of it are surprising, right? So you said when people first see you, they might make a lot of assumptions about you based on ethnicity or based on being a basketball player. But underneath that is a lot of different influences, a lot of different experiences. And again, the word that keeps coming up is opportunity. And so you've had a lot of opportunity, you've had a lot of exposure, and it has given you the gift of seeing the world differently and then being able to see others differently and then helping other people see you as more than just what you look like at first, right?
Yeah, and I was writing about this the other day, but it's like, and I talked about my transformation from freshman to senior year, but so I've been an athlete my whole life, and people tell you you're an athlete, you know you're an athlete, but it's up to you to realize one day that, you know what, I can do other things. And that's what was my biggest transformation from my freshman to senior year. I'm like, yeah, I'm playing a lot of basketball, but wow, I have this free, like, 3 hours in the middle of the day, like, what could I do with that? So, like, for me personally, I started working, like, with the Collegian, like, in advertising, and I joined a club on campus, which is the Public Relations Society, Student Society of America. I had a free summer, you know, I'm doing these basketball workouts at night, but I'm like, okay, what can I do during the day? And I started doing a few different internships around the city, which really set me up later for my future. So I would want people to know also that it's really important that you, like, you need that light to flick on. You need to know yourself that you can do other things. And, you know, just like, that's why I'm worried a lot of people don't have, like, the role model that I had in my dad, because I saw a African-American man who wasn't doing sports. And sometimes I'm afraid that we don't have a lot of those black role models in the world, like in the United States, that people can see and that people can relate with. So that makes them want to go out and do stuff that's, like, outside of sports.
Yeah. So I'm just struck by, hopefully I'm not reading too much into your story, but I'm just struck by the, again, opportunity. And it strikes me that for each of us, God is pouring into our lives in different ways, pouring into our life this opportunity, right, to see. And we haven't said this explicitly, but what we're really talking about is seeing the underneath, seeing more than just what we can see with our eyes. And it sounds like part of the crux of your story is learning to see differently, to see the world differently, because you've had a lot of opportunity, you've had a lot of experience, and that's a gift then as you see others, to see what's underneath, and as you help others see you, to see what's underneath. And I think that's a message for all of our students. So what opportunities is God pouring into our lives to give us the ability to see? And then who knows what comes next, right? Because then there are more opportunities and more understanding and more exposure, and it becomes sort of a very positive cycle. But that just strikes me, this opportunity and the ability to really see underneath.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, something I really felt called to do is be a role model for other people. And I think that's, like, a big motivator for me, that like, people will be able to see someone that they can relate with as a leader. And I think that's something that motivates me a lot. Like, to even go, it's a grad school and, like, public relations, which is my emphasis. And I want to be someone that people can see as a leader and a role model and someone that they can relate to.
Yeah. And going back to your comments earlier on how this has been a really good place for you to reflect, to see, to have opportunity, that, and you said, you know, it's not for everyone. And I think the goal of our campus really is that this becomes a place where everyone can have those opportunities to see and be seen. And I hope that our listeners feel that too, that our goal, our vision, to stay with the seeing words, our vision is that we would be able to see and be seen, right? Yeah. As more than just what is visible on the outside.
Absolutely.
Yeah, David, it has been such a delight to get to hear from you this afternoon, and for the experiences you've shared with us and the reminders that you've given to our campus community in recognizing that it is important to take that first step of seeking to know, seeking to understand, rather than living in blinded places or living with blind spots. It's so easy to do that in life because we live a very busy and full life, right? And so thank you. Thank you for bringing that reminder to us. And I can't express enough this afternoon how deeply grateful I have been for students like yourself who and become role models. And so you just took the words out of my heart when you said, you know, that you want to be a role model. And I hope and pray that you will be a role model for people wherever you go. And I'm glad you waited for 8 weeks to find out where you will get to go next. But I think it is my prayer for you and for students like yourself who deeply care about bringing a positive change in our world, where we bring dignity to each other because Christ has brought dignity to us. So instead of taking away from one's dignity, if we can contribute to it, then I think we are living in the invitation that we have received in Jesus Christ, right? To be his disciples, to be his children. So thank you. Asbury, it's been great to be back with you this afternoon with Maria Brown. It is always a delight, Maria, to be with you, not just on the Radio Hour, but also in Fletcher Early, perhaps even in the confines of our offices. So so thank you for being such a wonderful person to work with and co-host with. So, Asbury, thank you for listening to us. I don't know if we have any announcements before
we sign
off.
We do have a couple
off.
Of announcements. Yeah. Yes, we have one more song from David that we'll sign off with. I'll let you announce that in a second. But, David, it's been really great to hear your story. And I just feel privileged to get a little window into who you are. And I wish we had another hour. So thank you so much for sharing. And I hope that your story touches our listeners like it did us.
Thank you.
We will be back in 2 weeks on the radio again with another student story. So tune in on April the 10th. And then on April the 4th, we have a diversity dialogue. That's next Thursday night at 7 o'clock in the Stews. There's lots of stuff happening on campus, but this is going to be a really fun, interactive, cultural, exploring your cultural identity, if I can say the word, exploring your cultural identity. So we're going to have a student panel and also an interactive experience. So we would love to have you come to that. And David, I will let you sign us off with introducing this song.
Before I go, I just want to say thank you guys so much again for having me on the show.
Thank you.
This has been an awesome hour. My last song was One Dance, and first of all, Drake is probably my favorite artist, and second of all, I added it just so I just want people to know you don't have to be like serious all the time. It's okay to like let loose sometimes and you know just enjoy yourself.
So take us out on a fun note. Yeah, thank you, Sophie,
thank you
for helping us host here, and thank you, David and Esther as well.